the interviews and performances that we get on the air. And this one that we have going, that it's getting ready to start, I've been very excited about having this particular girl on the air with us for, like, ever since I first heard of them. And we have Esty Heim from Heim, who's playing the Surf Stage tonight at 5 o'clock. Thank you for coming by.
What's up, everyone?
How you doing?
I'm doing real good now that I'm at Hangout Fest.
Did you guys have a hard time getting here?
No, it's been like a weird rigmarole of sorts. We got our flight canceled when we were on our way to Baton Rouge. So we were kind of like Tom Hanks in Terminal for a day.
Oh, God.
Just like wandering around, like eating Cinnabon and like stuff that we probably shouldn't be eating in the first place. So, and then we finally got to Baton Rouge, and that was great. And it's just, you know, I'm a gypsy at heart, so traveling for me has never been a thing. But it's like, but I will say one thing. The heat is a bit intense.
Yeah, it's really hot.
I am melting.
Now, you grew up in California, so the heat isn't as bad.
Well, you'd think I'd be okay.
Right.
But this is a different kind of heat.
Right. It's a wet heat.
It's a wet heat. I'm used to, like, the valley, which is, like, dry heat. Like, I'm literally, like, frying eggs, like, on the sidewalk. And
I tried that once.
Did you?
Yeah. It was in Palm Desert in August.
That'll do it.
It was.
Story checks out.
Yeah. And it was like, wow, this really works, man.
It does. It really does. And then you get terrified and you're like, wait a minute. Global warming isn't real.
Yeah, I'm baking.
I'm actually baking. Yeah.
Now, your dad was a pro soccer player?
My dad was a professional soccer player. I think that in his maniacal brain, he wanted to also give birth to 3 or 4 soccer players and then have like a team.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, my sisters and I are not athletically inclined in that way. So we ended up just being 3 musicians. But my dad's kind of like a jack of all trades. Growing up, he played drums for his school choir and he sang. And it's actually a really funny story because my dad grew up in like a musical family.
Mm-hmm.
And his grandma, when he was a kid, was like, you guys need to join, like, this children's choir. Like, all the kids are doing it. It'll be really good for you, and I'll teach you how to sing. So my dad is a twin. He is another twin brother. They're identical.
Wow.
And my dad and my uncle auditioned. Everything went great. But my uncle didn't get in. But my dad did. My dad got in. I guess my dad had a better voice than my uncle. And my grandma, because she's a G, was like, told my dad, like, you're going to go back in there and you're going to be your brother and audition again. And so my dad went in as my uncle and got in. So then both my uncle and my dad were in the choir. So my grandma is my great grandma. It was his grandma, but I hear stories about her and it's like shrouded in like mythology almost, like this magical wizardress that was my great grandma. Like, had this, like, was, like, super business savvy and, like, social prowess and I don't know. I never got to meet her, unfortunately, but, like, she's definitely, like, someone that, like, I look up to in a weird way.
It's not a weird way at all. So,
yeah.
Now, your mom was on the Gong Show.
Yes, and she won the Gong Show.
Really?
So, okay. Well, it's kind of a whole story. So, my mom was, like, a folky guitar-playing babe. And she would play at this, like, open mic night, this coffee house in LA called Paladino's that's no longer around, unfortunately. But apparently it was really cool. And I guess Chuck Barris happened to go into Paladino's one night and saw my mom play and was like, and came up to my mom, of course, and was like, would you ever want to be on the Gong Show? I think, the prize was, like, $100 to Marie Callender's and, like, a trip to Universal Studios. So my mom was like, where do I sign? And so the story goes that she like went to CBS Studios in LA with her like hot curlers, like in tow and her acoustic guitar in like a Diane von Furstenberg crushed blue velvet jumpsuit, played this like Bonnie Raitt B-side.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't get gonged. And I think she got like all 8s and 9s, but, a father son pop and lock group actually won the Gong Show. So she didn't get gonged.
Right.
But she didn't win either. And then like 6 months later, Chucky called up my mom and was like, hey, like, do you want to like come back on the show and just like do the exact same thing you did? I guess because this is before the YouTubes and the interwebs.
Mm-hmm.
people just kind of couldn't like look up something on the internet and be like, wait a minute, she was on the show like a year ago or whatever.
Right.
So they were just like, she was good. Like, let's have her back on the show. So my mom went on a second time. And then that time she won.
And what song? Do you remember the song?
Same song. She did the exact same thing. It was called Blender Blues. It was like a weird, it was like a tongue in cheek. Like, let me be your blender, baby. Don't you know I can whip, chop, and puree?
Like, and it's an old Bonnie Raitt song.
It's an old Bonnie Raitt song that I guess, I don't even know if it ended up on like an actual album. I think my mom heard it on like a live record maybe.
Uh-huh.
But I know she saw it live because my mom was ensconced, like obsessed with Bonnie Raitt. That was like her idol. It was like her and Joni Mitchell.
Well, Joni.
I mean, my mom did nothing but teach us Bonnie Raitt and Joni Mitchell songs and Joan Baez and Linda Ronstadt. My mom was like such a tried and true like lady fan.
Mm-hmm.
She just loved female voices, and that definitely translated into like our growing up.
Well, if you guys grew up in Sherman Oaks, then yes. You're right down the road from Laurel Canyon, which is where all that
right.
music came from.
Three miles away.
Your drummer is Dash Hutton.
Dash Hutton.
And his dad is
Danny Hutton.
Right, from Three Dog Night.
Exactly. There's a lot of, I mean, that whole area is like, again, so like mystical and magical. And I definitely, in my younger days, in my late teens, I broke into, oh my God, I can't stop telling the story. I broke into the Frank Zappa mansion.
Uh-huh.
So the Frank Zappa house is on Lookout Mountain and Laurel Canyon, which is like next to the Houdini mansion. And you know the whole mythology of like there's a tunnel that goes under Laurel Canyon that connects the two Houdini houses?
No.
So apparently, because Houdini owned two houses on Laurel Canyon that were across the street from each other. And the whole thing was he wanted to like create this idea that he could be in two places at once. So he dug, there was a tunnel underneath Laurel Canyon, so he could be in one house, and if he wanted to, like, whatever, like, free people out, he'd just go in the underground tunnel and go to the other house and be like, sorry, like, now you see me, now you don't.
Wow.
And then, so that was, like the turn of the century, like, 1900s, like, whatever. And then Frank Zappa moved into that house that was also connected to the tunnel, and he had it blocked off because he was like, that's kind of weird. Like, I don't really know if I want, like, people to be able to, like, sneak into my house in, like, a weird underground tunnel under Laurel Canyon. So there's this book that I read that I forget the name of the – if you Google, like, Laurel Canyon mythology, it's, like, the first book that comes up on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it years ago, but, like, there's all these stories about, like, Houdini and, like – I don't know. There's stories about the Black Dahlia, just all these like really amazing, like weird unsolved mysteries, type things.
Well, I used to love to drive over Laurel Canyon when I would go to the Valley from Hollywood, because I got to drive by the country store, and right behind it was where
Jim Morrison with that bell, the bell tower.
Did you ever see where they had written up Mojo Rising underneath the window?
Yes. Well, this is another weird story. So before it got remodeled, because it's not the same anymore. Someone bought it and then remodeled it, unfortunately. But before they did that, my friend rented it out and had a party there. And in one of the bathrooms, she, like, took out, like, a slab of wood.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was the people that had renovated it before, even after Jim Morrison had left, put, like, a shower in front of another shower. I guess it was super like Mickey Mouse construction. Took out a slab of wood, and we looked inside, and it was the old shower. And in the shower was just graffiti of like, Jim was here. Like,
really?
Like, it looked like people, I guess maybe after he'd passed away.
Right.
Fans had like come to the house and like written things like in his house. And in that shower was like all these things like, Jim, miss you, Jim. Like, Jim was here. Like, it was super trippy.
That's really trippy.
It's super duper trippy. But yeah, I think that's kind of like the name of the game when you grow up in LA and like, and you're into music and
mm-hmm.
you kind of get into all these like weird situations where you're like, oh, okay, I'm just like looking into Jim Morrison's old shower like in Laurel Canyon, and it's casual. It's just like a normal, it's like a Tuesday.
That's exactly what I would do though.
Right.
I mean, that's something I would go look for.
No. Well, that, like I said, like, and then I broke into Frank Zappa's house and like, oh God, it was so weird. I had like a seance in his backyard with a bunch of my girlfriends when I was 19, 20.
Okay.
And we found like an opening in the fence, and like went in, and we knew it was vacant. We knew that it was on the market because my mom's a real estate agent. Mm-hmm. So I told my friends, I was like, it's on the market. There's no one living there. Like, we should totally go. And we went, and like in his backyard, there's like a whole wall. Like, it's like cavernous. There's like all these caves in his backyard. And so we like went into some of the caves, and we saw that other people had done the same thing. Like, stayed there. There was a sleeping bag there that I guess someone had left. But we had like a weird, we thought we were like the characters in The Craft and like had chalk and were like, I guess trying to like maybe get in touch with Frank Zappa in mm-hmm. some weird way, but it didn't work. And then all of a sudden we saw flashing lights and we were like, we got really scared because I guess we thought that the cops were there. And so we all just like sprinted like gazelles out of the like hopping fences, and we thought we were like such like rebels, like, oh, like we escaped the law, like, but yeah, I guess that's just kind of what you do, like, when you grow up in LA, and like, there's all these like nooks and crannies that you can kind of get into that are like weird and have all this history, and it's a great place to grow up. I grew up in the Valley. It was definitely sweltering, I'll give you that, but it was also there were a lot of kids whose like parents were into music or played music and had success in music, mm-hmm. and so it was definitely a very creative place to grow up.
Do you still live out there now?
I do. I still live in the Valley.
Do you?
I haven't left. Unless someone gives me a reason, someone like, I don't know, puts a ring on my finger or something and then like wants to move to like the Palisades. I don't know. I don't even think I'd move to the Palisades. I feel like if I was going to move anywhere, I'd move to like Venice or something to be by the beach.
Yeah.
You know?
Or Catalina. You gotta love it out there.
Wild buffalo, where the buffalo roam.
Yeah. And and they have these drinks out there called buffalo milks.
What is that?
It's like what we have here is a bushwhacker. It's got like cocoa flavored liquor and vodka and all. It really
got
will just
you.
Mess you up.
Well, I mean, added to the list. I unfortunately, I'm not really a drinker. I'm diabetic. So like, it's hard for me to be able to like keep up with most people when they go out drinking because mm-hmm. I can't. Do it really, and all the good drinks are the sugary ones, in my opinion.
I
like
agree with
like
you.
give me a Cosmopolitan, and I'm like I'm out for the night. So, but
now your band, did your parents form it, or did you guys decide to do it?
No, well my parents and I had a band together.
Mm-hmm.
So we grew up playing music with our mom and dad, and it was always just covers. And my parents couldn't write music; they didn't really know how to. Even though my mom would like write lyrics and she was super poetic but her songs were mostly like folky things that Danielle Alon and I were just kind of like, oh, it's like mom's like weird poetry set to music. So it wasn't really like the stuff we were listening to at the time that we kind of formed the band were like, we were really into like, you know, the Spice Girls, and I was really into Korn and Orgy and God, Limp Bizkit, Marilyn Manson.
I've got a great porn story I'll have to tell you later.
Oh, my God. I was such a nu metal kid. So anything you want to tell me about any of the people that I just mentioned, I'm all ears.
It's really quick. I used to live in Huntington Beach, and I would uh-huh. play this bar that Korn also played before they made it. And they got thrown out for fighting with the bouncers.
Oh, all store checks out. That sounds about right. I loved them. Follow the Leader, I was like... And my parents were terrified because I was listening to this music, and they said that I could listen to it as long as I listened to it on headphones. I just couldn't play it in the house.
Really?
Yeah. They were like, do whatever you want. I mean, because, you know, my parents are, we grew up like, they weren't strict, but they also weren't lenient. They were somewhere in the middle. They were like, for some things they were really strict about, like we had to get good grades.
Mm-hmm.
But other things, it was like, if something had a parental advisory on it, my parents weren't really like, they just didn't want to hear it.
Right.
I could listen to it, but they were just like, I don't want to hear that in the house right now.
Well, speaking of grades, is it true you have a degree in ethnomusicology?
I do, from UCLA. Woo woo!
What?
Alumni.
What exactly is that?
Ethnomusicology is the study of music and culture, mm-hmm. and how the music influences the culture and vice versa, and how they have like a dialectical relationship.
Really?
I basically knew that I didn't want to get a degree in jazz. I'd been studying jazz since I was 8. And I feel like I'd kind of learned all that I could learn about it. And I was really, really into Brazilian music. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I just knew that I liked it. And I knew that I liked world music. I knew that I had an appreciation for it, but it wasn't like I had really like looked under the hood, you know, to kind of see what made Brazilian music and what made Chinese music. And so I decided that I would audition, and I basically just, I played bass for them. I played a Chick Corea song. I played Spain. I was like, that's a country. Maybe that'll work. I literally didn't know what I was doing. I was just like, I'm just going to audition for this school. And because I knew that I wanted to go to college. I knew I wanted to get a degree because that was really important to me growing up. And I got in. And so I went, and the degree, it was a 5-year program.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it in 2 years. Because I knew that I wanted to get a degree, but I also knew that it was hard for me. It was a struggle because I knew that I wanted to study and get a degree, but I also knew that I wanted to do the thing that I was studying. I knew that I wanted to do music. So I worked really, really hard and didn't really do anything other than study. And I had like my own, I had like a studio apartment in Westwood and right across from In-N-Out and
Double with cheese animal style.
Like and yeah.
Animal fries and Neapolitan
cheese. It was a sloppy situation for a long time.
I've been to that In-N-Out.
I mean, on a Friday and a Saturday, it's bedlam.
Yeah.
It's just like, but I would go there in the morning. It was really bad. And then after that, I became vegan. So, because I just saw what it did to my body. The freshman 15 was like a joke. I think I gained like 60 or 70 pounds, like something crazy in the 2 years that I was there.
Wow. 'Cause
it wasn't just the In-N-Out that was there. It was also like the gas station that was across the street from my house. So it was like all diabetic friendly things like slushies and Pop-Tarts and Hostess Donuts. So because I was so stressed with all, like my workload, I would just eat my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I gained some weight. So, but yeah, and then I graduated and my sisters and I kind of threw ourselves into writing because Danielle had just gone on tour with Julian Casablancas for a year, almost a year and a half. And his parting words to her were, just write for a year. Just write. Don't do anything else. Don't play shows. Disappear for a year. People have seen you play. Go write. And I graduated college, and Alana graduated high school in the same month. So we kind of took that as a sign, like, okay, like we can just kind of take time off and just do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a job working retail, and Alana became a nanny. Danielle was still doing music and doing session work. And every day we would write. And we locked ourselves away in Danielle's house, and it was in Venice. It was beautiful. It was like this like tiny little like one bedroom house, but it was like right next to the beach and right next to Abbot Kinney, and it was super inspiring. And we wrote, I mean, if we didn't write a song a day, it was like a song every 2 days. We just knew that we needed to sit down and like hunker down and just have like some kind of output.
And is that where the first nucleus of the first album came from?
Yeah. So most of the first record came out of that year-long hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
From playing live. But I felt super inspired. My sisters and I, at that point, had gone through a lot of heartache. And to be honest, like most of the songs that I think that we have the biggest emotional connection to are songs that are about heartache and unrequited love and or love lost and like this trail of broken hearts. And those are the songs I think that we just kind of have the biggest, we just feel the most when we hear those songs. And it's weirdly comforting to know that someone else is going through something that you've gone through or you're going through. So when we were writing those songs, all three of us were going through weird times relationship-wise and hadn't really found our footing in regards to love and like what love was and like love lost and what it's like to love someone and then find out that they don't love you back and how, yeah. So that was basically the catalyst for all the songs being written.
We're talking with Esty Heim of Heim, who is playing at the Surf Stage tonight at 5:00. Now, your live shows tend to rock more, a lot more than your records. And is it tough, do you think, to capture the live feeling on record?
I don't know if that's the reason why it sounds different. I think that my sisters and I really have a love of production value.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew the kind of record that we wanted to make, and we knew how we wanted it to sound. And so we just made that record, not really trying to capture what we do live per se. But I think that it was more about we sound one way live, and then maybe we sound a little different on record. But I don't think that that's... I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think it's strange either. I think that we just tend to kind of let go more when we're on stage. And I think that having that as an outlet is just really magical and really beautiful.
Well, tonight you're playing right by the beach, right by the Gulf of Mexico.
I know. So I'm really excited about it.
It's going to be awesome. And you guys are going to have a blast.
I might jump into the water, like, post-show. I might do it during the set. I might just, like, jump off the stage and, like, ask someone to give me a piggyback ride, like, into the ocean.
If I'm there, I will be more than happy to.
Really? You'll give me a piggyback ride?
I will give you a piggyback ride to the ocean.
Like, you'll pretend like you're a dolphin, and I'll just, like, hold onto your shoulders and
absolutely
pretend it's a dorsal fin. And
absolutely
we can just, like, freewheelie it in the middle of the ocean.
If that's what you want, I will do that.
I want that. That is my wish for today. So make it happen. I'll be really sad if we don't. And then I want to get ice cream after. I want to get ice cream. This is what I want. I want to go into the ocean, hold on to someone's back, and pretend they're a dolphin. That's one wish.
Uh-huh.
Two is I want some kind of ice cream on a cone.
Okay.
Preferably Rocky Road. Uh-huh. Worst comes to worst, cookies and cream. And I really want to start a dance party.
Well, you can do that during the show for sure.
I'm going to try. I really want people to be able to dance to our show. And then if it, I'm betting dollars to donuts, it's going to happen when we play. But if it doesn't afterwards, I'm going to start a dance party at Florence and the Machine.
Yeah, because you guys opened for them, right?
Yeah. We went on tour with her. She's like, she knows how much I love her, but let me reiterate, I love Florence Welch. I think that she's a magical, beautiful wizardress, and she's, it's rare that I find people that can keep up with me, and she's already like 10 steps ahead of me, like wherever
really
we go. She is the most burning ball of energy. I've never met anyone like her, and I love her so much.
So that's after your show tonight. You'll be
I'm going to be hightailing it over to go see Flo.
All right. One last question, and then we're going to let you guys go.
Go for it.
I recently saw a concert video that you guys did in London.
Okay.
You saw some guy in the audience. You thought he was really cute.
Yes.
You gave me your cell phone number.
Yes, I did.
Was that really your cell phone
number? That was my cell phone number. And then, because at the time I was single, and I'm single now, just so you know.
I'm
Gene. Single.
Hi.
Again. I saw this guy, and he was really cute, and he was taking photos of me. It looked like he was just taking photos of me, and I was like, well, if that's not a sign. So during the show, I told him to send it to me, and he was like, well, how am I going to do that? And I was like, well, you're going to text it to me. I'm going to give you my number. And so I sent it in the microphone so everyone could hear. I honest to God didn't think that it was going to be, I didn't know that it was going to be like live streamed for like 6 months.
Right.
I thought it was like a one time thing, and like maybe I'd get like text messages from people now and again, and like I could handle that. But then it wasn't what I thought it was, and people just had my number for a good year and a half.
You changed it, didn't you?
Now I did. But the only, honestly, I would have kept it, because if anything, me giving my number out was a blessing. Everywhere I went, in every country, every city, I'd get text messages from people that were living there that were either coming to our show or were fans of ours, and they'd be like, hey, you should go to like this cafe. Hey, make sure you check this out. So it was like I had like Condé Nast Traveler like on my iMessage. Like I had so many different people like reaching out and like giving me tips on where to go and like telling me like good luck on your show tonight. It was like it was the best thing that I think I've ever done. But then eventually I started getting people that were saying mean things. And that's when I was like, okay, well, now it's not fun anymore.
Mm.
You know? So I had to change it. And also my parents were like, you literally don't see any of our text messages. You haven't written us back like in a year.
Right.
So I feel like it's time to either get a new cell phone, like a different number, and keep the other one. And I was like, I can't afford that. I'm just going to have to change my number. So, yeah. So that's why I did it. And it was the best thing that I've ever done, honestly. It was so nice. And I still talk to, like, a lot of the people that text messaged me.
What about the guy?
Guy never did.
Oh, man.
The guy text messaged me, and we had, like, a tete-a-tete, if you will, like, a little bit of an exchange. And then I think he might have, like, gotten an actual girlfriend. And he was like, I can't really text message Justin Hyam anymore. I know. His name was Giles. That's all I remember.
And if he's listening, Giles, dude, what were you thinking?
Giles, yo, man, you broke my heart.
There you go.
And your photography skills were top tier. Best photos I've ever had of myself, if I'm being honest here.
We've been talking with S.D. Hyam of Hyam's Airplane tonight on the Surf Stage at 5 o'clock. We're going to hear from Hyam in just a moment. S.D., I really appreciate you coming by.
Anytime.
Today, man. This was awesome.
Any excuse to come to Alabama.
And
give me an excuse.
Well, we do have Rocky Road ice cream.
Okay.
We have a Gulf of Mexico.
That's fun.
And we have dolphins. Real or otherwise.
I would love, like, my right hand to be on a real one and my left hand to be on a human. And then just, like, ride the waves. If I can make that happen. And then, like, in my mind, there's, like, leashes attached, but I'm not going to go that far.
Okay.
Like, I'm not. That's, like, my weird fantasy. But I'm not going to go. I'm not going to do that. Dolphin or human, either or. Let's just go swimming. I'll be happy.
We can do this.
Okay, cool. Well, it was really nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you.
Even though I thought that we'd met before, but I'm just, like, a nerd. And
we may have, actually.
I feel like we did. I think you just forgot about me.
I would never forget you.
I highly doubt that. You know what it is? Maybe we ran into each other when you were living in Van Nuys.
That's what I'm thinking.
Or maybe you saw, like, my family band play, like, at the Sherman Oaks Street Fair or something.
I could have. I mean, it's like, because I was out there for many, many years.
That's what I'm
saying. And I left and I came back and left and came back, so.
I don't know. Or maybe you just blocked it out of your mind. You're like, that girl.
No.
Never again.
With the bass face, please.
Listen, it only comes out on special occasions. It can't be forced. I wish it could be. Anyway. I'm going to go play some music.
All right. We will see you at 5 o'clock tonight on the Surf Stage. It's S.D. Hyam from Hyam.
Bye, guys.
And you're listening to Hangout Radio, powered by 92 Zoo. We're going to hear some Hyam up next on the Zoo.